Welcome to the Athenaeum Review podcast, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is Ambassador Jorge Alberto Lozoya, who's had a long and distinguished career as an internationalist and historian, active in many fields in public television, in the museum world. He's been in the diplomatic service, in embassy to and consulate to Taiwan, Israel, Palestine, Malaysia, and Spain, and UNESCO, among others, and has received decorations from many international governments, as well as being the author of numerous books and articles, including several volumes on the new international economic order, as well as on Mexican cinema, the Mexican army, and I also saw one on Ibero-American gastronomy, which I very much want to read. Ambassador Lozoya, thank you very much for being here.
Well, my pleasure. I'm very, very old, as you can tell from what Ben just wrote. I'm in red.
It's a distinguished career. Most recently, as the founding director of the International Museum of the Baroque in Puebla, Mexico, you gave a very interesting lecture on that museum and its creation. And I wanted to ask you about this term, the Baroque, which, as you described, is not only a certain kind of twisted pearl, a historical period in art history, but also a word that can be applied to contemporary culture. And I wonder whether in your sense of history, if certain aspects of contemporary culture can also be considered Baroque. Do you see the history as kind of going in some kind of cycle, perhaps?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And this is the whole point.
Yeah.
In that sense, Western history, fortunately, yeah, is approaching Asian and African perspectives.
Yeah.
History comes back.
Okay.
Not the same.
Yeah.
But it's a system that is twisting itself.
Yeah.
Baroque, as you just said, is a Portuguese word defining the unperfect pearl.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea that life is amorphous,
yeah,
twisted, disguises itself, mysterious, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Unexpected.
Yeah.
That is coming back, especially in the West,
yeah,
that for the last at least 200 years, thought or hoped that history and life were rational,
yeah,
that you could plan,
yeah,
that things were going to be progressive,
yes,
progressive,
yeah,
in
yeah,
one line, that you could literally preconceive your future,
yeah,
as a person, as a family, as a nation. It's not like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, the Chinese, the Indians, the Koreans, the Latin Americans know that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's now for the Dutch and for the French and for the Scandinavians to learn that.
Okay.
But Mexico had a wonderful experience during the Baroque period, which,
yeah,
is the 17th and 18th centuries. We were very lucky. We were a big power.
Yeah, yeah.
We handle very successfully the trans-Pacific trade,
yeah,
of the Spanish Empire, which,
yeah,
was very good.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that the Philippines were part of Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah.
So navigating from Acapulco in the Pacific coast of Mexico to Manila was a daily thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it came out very well.
Yeah.
And Puebla was the trade capital of New Spain, of Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
Mexico City, as of today, was the political center.
Yeah.
But Puebla was where the trade was handled.
Yeah.
Therefore, the wealth coming from that enormously successful first globalization,
yeah,
produced a very wealthy society,
yeah,
that now wants to pay tribute to that period in the museum, and at the same time, learn for the future.
Yeah. that this galleon, which you discussed also in your talk, going in between Acapulco and Manila, from those very early days, I was curious whether, I know this is sort of a big question, but between that first period and today, has the trade with Asia continued that whole time, or sort of ebbed and flowed?
China is now our second trade partner.
Yeah.
Of Mexico.
Yeah.
Second only to the USA.
Yeah.
I'm replying to your question.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are going back.
Yeah.
To Asia with our partners of the past.
Yeah.
Peru, mm-hmm. Chile, Ecuador, and mm-hmm. Colombia.
Yeah.
The Manila galleon came to Acapulco.
Yeah.
And 1/3 of the products went down the Pacific to Peru.
Yeah.
For 200 years. Now we are going back together. Yes. The answer is yes, and very positive.
So it in between the kind of the contemporary time in the 1980s, 90s, and so forth, and going back to the 17th and 18th century, that trade continued throughout that whole period?
No.
No.
We stopped with the independence.
Yeah.
In the 19th century.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it. One of the conditions that England imposed on our republic to recognize its independence in the early 19th century was that we stopped navigating in the Pacific.
Interesting.
Because they were expanding.
Because they want, yeah.
There's a logic.
Yeah.
The British were entering very successfully the Pacific. And our national heroes that consolidated the independence agreed.
Yeah.
So we suddenly stopped.
Right.
All the 19th century and a good part of the 20th century, we did not travel regularly by sea to back to Asia. It's true.
Yeah. In terms of the in your experience, both diplomatic and cultural, I wanted to ask you also about, let's say, the cultural trade between Mexico and Asia, for instance. Would there be certain authors from Asia or artists from Asia who are especially renowned in Mexico?
No.
or the other way?
No.
So it's less
not
familiar.
Yet.
Not yet.
At the same time, and entre nous, and we are intellectually concerned with these matters, individual artists, including literature, mm-hmm. are a Western phenomenon.
Ah, can you explain what you mean?
Well, they are, to a great extent, the very positive and creative product of Western civilization. For instance, in painting, the Chinese insist very much on that today. The idea of you becoming a superstar, a painter, a famous painter, is not Chinese.
Interesting.
Historically.
Yeah.
For instance, I don't know if you are aware of that, but Chinese artists, landscapers, never painted in the countryside or at the seashore.
Yeah.
They would go sit there, look at whatever they were experiencing, and then they would go and draw at their studio.
At the studio, yeah.
The idea of sitting there and use your paintings, that's not
interesting.
It.
Okay.
And the role of literature is also a Western European phenomenon that, of course, became an eclosion in the 19th century.
Yeah.
Mm? So the Asians, of course, they learn from that, copied that, but now they're going back to their own way of perceiving the arts, which is something that we in this part of the world, in America, should should learn more about. Yeah. And you, please allow me to congratulate you, Ben, personally, for the fantastic production of the Athenaeum Review.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I think that you personally are doing an extraordinary effort. I read the first issue of the magazine, of the review, with enormous interest and great admiration, because the work of putting together the thinking of very important experts on things that they are not experts on was fantastic.
Thank you.
I have experience as a journalist and an editor, and I appreciate the enormous effort that you personally put into this. Congratulations.
Thank you. That is very kind. I hope that we can continue. I appreciate it. Another question I had about the Baroque in this country. Let's say if you take maybe one art history class, you might learn about the Baroque and one or two artists like Bernini or, you know, European artists.
Caravaggio.
Yes, but as you mentioned, the extremely rich Baroque culture in Puebla is really amazing. I wonder if you could describe maybe something about the kind of Baroque style in Puebla that might be very unfamiliar to someone who only knows Bernini and Caravaggio.
Well, Puebla, like all central Mexico, was born with the first splendors of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church was a creation, really, of Spain and Portugal as empires.
Yeah.
And the Spaniards themselves didn't really know what was all going to be about. They were experimenting. That's why Barroco is an experiment. It's not true that the Jesuits and the Franciscans and the Dominican priests knew what they were going to do. They were exploring, discovering, conquering.
Yeah.
So they found in central Mexico extremely advanced civilizations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That were very good at the arts and crafts.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. The Cathedral of Puebla, which is a magnificent Baroque and post-Baroque construction, was finally completed politically by a wonderful man who was a great bishop, Palafox.
Yeah.
And in his memoirs, he wrote one weekend, "This is marvelous." They were finishing the building.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, "All these Mexican," he meant indigenous people.
Yeah.
"All these Mexican workers are fantastic."
Yeah.
"And this morning, while I was supervising," he says, "a very young man, completely naked, like an angel, was at the top of the tower, and from there, he shouted in his language, that is in Nahuatl, 'Move, move away, because if I fall, I will take you all with me to the paradise.'" I said, "I'm working with angels, naked and up there." I said, "Move yourself, because if I fall, I'll take you to paradise." This is wonderful.
Yeah.
No? Yeah. And it's true. Both the Aztecs, the Chichimecas, the Cholultecas, all the people of the central of Mexico were extraordinary builders, painters, sculptors.
Yeah.
So there was a matching.
Yeah.
And this is important. The Spanish missionaries that came to Mexico in the late 16th, beginning 17th century, many of them were coming from India and from China and from what we now call Southeast Asia, Indonesia, Cambodia. So they had seen also the extremely, we would say, Baroque architecture and sculptures of India, of Malaysia, of Indonesia. So when they arrived to America and found people who, by the way, Mexican indigenous people, look very Southeast Asian.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You see a Mexican Indian and he looks from Malaysia or from Indonesia. Yeah. So they matched the idea, saying, okay, these people, as the great civilizations, non-Christian of Asia, know how to sculpt flowers, angels, baroque.
Yes.
We got to a point that the super baroque design of Puebla's churches and palaces was called Churriguera, which was a Basque Spanish architect.
Yeah.
Churriguera, the top of twisted and all that. So we're very proud of that, and it's very legitimate. It's extremely complex. And if you are not a Catholic and you're a Westerner, sometimes you find it difficult to understand people who come from a Northern European
Protestant
faith are used to empty churches when saints were removed. So suddenly you come to this full of gold and color temple and said, oh my God, can you concentrate here?
right.
And we do, but Protestants, usually have a problem because they have a much more austere approach to praying and to connecting with God.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because, I mean, even here, here in Dallas, which is fairly global, of course, there are Catholic churches, but there also is a particular, well, actually, there are several, but I've been to one or two, actually, Hindu temples.
Uh-huh.
And what you described, it's so similar. It reminds me of what you said a moment ago about the Baroque elsewhere, that it seems that both the Hindu and Catholic aesthetic with this proliferation is quite,
It's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
It matched. It was happening.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church was beginning to become universal. That's what the meaning of Catholic is, as you know.
Yes. Yeah.
So they traveled all over Asia.
Yeah.
And you can imagine if you were born in France and you arrive and see elephants that are gods.
Yeah.
In Calcutta.
Yeah. Or,
well, and then you come to our part of America and you also find animals being gods. So the melange is very creative, and we're very proud of this Baroque identity of Central Mexico and especially Puebla. Yes.
Amazing. Well, I also wanted to ask about a little bit about your own background, and I found one article actually in which, or I believe you described taking a bus trip all the way across the United States to the United Nations, and visiting the United Nations and being struck by
it was my 15th birthday.
15. Okay. And where you coming from?
Mexico
from
City.
From Mexico City all the way to
by bus
alone for school
I, my birthday is in December.
Yeah.
And I was always a good student.
Yeah.
And when I was going to turn 15, that in Mexico is a very symbolic age, I asked my father, could I go to New York? I had never been.
Yeah.
And he said, well, if you get the proper prices, which I knew I was going to, you'll go. And I won. So I went to, my father said, okay, give me my plane ticket.
Yeah.
And who else is going with me? Are you coming? He said, no.
Yeah.
First of all, you are going alone.
Yeah.
Oh, and you are going by bus. I said, excuse me, yes?
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you money, and that's it. No traveler's checks at the time. Yeah. Needless to say, no credit cards.
Yeah, yeah.
God bless you, I'm back. The only thing I want is a postcard from you from New York City.
Okay.
And I did.
Yeah.
I traveled by Greyhound the entire country, and I landed in New York City for my birthday.
Amazing.
Which I spent drinking 3 beers, talking to the marble lions at the entrance of New York's public library.
Yes.
That was like that. And the next day, the day of my birthday, I went to the UN headquarters, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And I entered, like many other tourists, to see one of the main halls with the diplomats working there.
Yeah.
So at the end of the tour, led by a Spanish lady, of course it was in Spanish, the group, I ask her, what is it, what can I do to work here?
Yeah.
And everybody laughed. And she said, oh, the tour is finished. Go. You young man, come here. What was your question? I would like to work here.
Yeah.
What should I study? And she said, international relations, and you have to speak Spanish, English, Russian, and Chinese. So I said, thank you. Many, many years later, I chaired an international meeting in that same hall. And when I was listening, you know, to the distinguished delegates, I suddenly turned my sight and I saw the tourists watching from the top. Yeah. And I was extremely moved because it was the realization of my dream. I made it.
Amazing.
But I worked very consistently on this, and I must say I had the absolute, total support of my parents,
amazing.
Both my father, who was a very distinguished physician, and my mother, who was a wonderful nurse. And they supported all my crazy dreams. And by the age of 17, I was already studying in Russia. And then I studied Chinese at Stanford University. I've been a blessed person, very lucky.
It's a remarkable story. And did you studied in Moscow as well? Yes. And so you got the Russian and the Chinese and everything.
Yes.
When you were, and I know doing, as you mentioned, doing advanced study, so you were, from that age, you were already determined to be a diplomat from age. So you had,
And I learned that knowing others is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And that you have to be trained systematically to understand other civilizations.
Yeah.
Other races.
Yeah.
Other languages.
Yeah.
But it's for good.
Yeah.
But it's not easy.
Yeah.
You see?
No.
So if you are having trouble understanding the global world, it's normal.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's going to get more complicated.
Yes.
Because everybody has rights and positions.
Yeah.
And with the instant communication of today, everybody expresses his or her points of view.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
Yeah.
It's democratic and it's fun, but it's very difficult.
Very.
So we need more diplomats, more people in international relations, but who are prepared to build something. Yeah. It's not just sympathy.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of training, like in this university.
Yeah.
Like Richard Brutel, like you yourself, working with the alien nature of communication among cultures and disciplines.
Yeah. That reminds me, well, with this question of globalization, I wondered. I'm sure, especially now, it seems very, at least in this country, very frequently, and in other countries too. You know, it's clear that many people see globalization as a kind of threat, saying, I don't want my job to go to another country. I'm afraid. People are afraid. I say they're worried that globalization.
You have to be afraid of being afraid.
Yes. Okay. So that's what you would.
Absolutely.
What would you tell someone?
Things are going to get more complicated.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Right.
You will defeat yourself by being afraid.
Yeah. This is the Athenaeum Review podcast, and we're talking with Ambassador Jorge Alberto Lozoya about globalization and the Baroque.